On the Wake Up Radio presents The Hour.
You must remember, the enemy has only images and illusions, behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image, and it will break the enemy. The it that you refer to is a powerful weapon.
What is life?
The story we tell ourselves. And every story needs a beginning. Your imagined suffering makes you lifelike.
Lifelike, but not alive. Pain only exists in the mind. It's always imagined. So what's the difference between my pain and yours? Between you and me?
Welcome to On the Wake Up Radio. I am your guest host for the evening, DC Radical One, and this is The Hour. Shout out to Ra on the boards. Check us out on onthewakeupradio.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube, SoundCloud, Google Play, and iTunes and Stitcher at On the Wake Up Radio. Also, check out our Gas Chamber USA hats. Support us, please. Check out these free PDFs we have. Those of you who truly appreciate declassified documents, along with reading material, will be happy at our Evergreen selection. Thanks to Brother Cam. Also, if you can, please donate $2, $5, or any amount, as it will go to our website and our airtime. It is a labor of love, but we still live in a capitalist society, which means everything costs. If you appreciate the free content, please help us keep up the message. Keep the message uncensored and free. You can donate through PayPal at onthewakeupradio@gmail.com. Also, if you would like an advertising slot, please hit us up at onthewakeupradio@gmail.com. And you can help us out, family, so we can do what we continue to do. Again, I am your guest host, DC Radical One. And tonight's discussion we're going to have, it's going to be on revolutionary black love. And we're going to go through this discussion for about the first half hour or so. And then we'll take any calls that we have available. And the root of this discussion, or how it came about, I did a lecture with the same title about a year ago. And the lecture was actually inspired by a reading of The Destruction of Black Civilization by Dr. Chancellor Williams. And I got some further insight into this topic, talking to an elder, Baba Walimu Baruti. And it's one of those things that you're starting to see now, people starting to popularize, and they're starting to say that black love is revolutionary. And in this time, it is. We see constantly throughout the media the bombardment of images of black men with white women, black women with white men. Occasionally, if you pay attention, they'll slip something by you with white women and black women. And I just saw somebody send me an image the other day of a black man and a white man laying in bed together. It was some type of advertisement. You know, sometimes people send you things and you just kind of just wish they didn't send you. And that was one of those things. And I tried to purge that from my mind. But this just goes to show, if we're really paying attention, if your opponent is trying to stop you from doing something, trying to convince you that it's not good, that obviously is what you need to be doing. So I think people who consider themselves quote unquote conscious, some of these various labels that black people like to use, we won't get into all of them. We can all kind of agree that in order to be this, that it takes, that one of the conditions that if you're a black man, you should be with a black woman. You're a black woman, you should be with a black man. Now, if you don't agree with that statement, the rest of the discussion is not for you. You don't have to worry about it. You tune it out. You move on with your life. But for those who understand that, we have to take it to a higher level and go beyond just the mere fact of being a black man who chooses random black woman A and a black woman who chooses random black man B. And the reason I say this is because, having started in this movement as a teenager, and I'll be candid and say last century, one of the things that I've seen over time that has really hampered the movement has been the lack of quality African-centered, like-minded couples coming together, producing children who don't have to start from point A. Many of us, we come into this movement, we don't have any background, any knowledge. We don't know very much of our history. We don't know very much of our culture. We're not rooted in any form of African spirituality. All of these things. Over a lifetime, we develop this knowledge. As we develop this knowledge, we meet different people and we spread it to different people. And that's our impact and that's our legacy on the world. But that's not the ideal. And that's not really the African way of doing things. And so we're going to go into this concept of what revolutionary black love is, and we're going to get some definitions, and then we're going to get into how things are ideally, and then we're going to take a couple of historical examples and discuss them. So when we talk about revolutionary black love, first of all, the first term, revolutionary. Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad said it's complete constructive change. And for African people, this means African sovereignty and an end to not only white domination, but at this point, Chinese colonialism, Arab imperialism, and all other threats to African black people. And I'm going to use African and black synonymously. You can translate that into whatever ideology you have. I'm not here to debate that. Black, again, African, dealing with people originating on the continent of Africa, the original people on the planet. Simple, very easy to understand. And love, a verb denoting caring and giving in the African context, as opposed to lust and desire in the European context. Through my studies, one thing I've understood is that many words and concepts and ideas in traditional African society are exactly the opposite of what they are in Western society. And since we've been Westernized so long, it's very difficult for us to kind of peel away the layers and find the root and the understanding of certain words and concepts. And love is probably the most essential and yet most difficult to understand from our cultural context. And in a Western context, it's hard for people in the West to understand it. So think about being deculturalized and trying to understand it from your original context. And you look at the Adinkra language, the term is Akoma, and the Kemetic term for love is Myrrh. And when you study these definitions and what our ancestors meant, it's really, really something that's really deep and really not just profound, but very vast in the understanding of what love is. And it's very hard to really translate into the European context. Now, for those who would be African, for those who would be revolutionary, and those who would be revolutionary Africans, finding, cultivating, expressing, and actuating black love is the hardest, yet most essential thing for us to do. And the reason why it's the hardest thing for us to do is because we live in a society where the people who rule the society understand the power of black love. You see, when we look at things historically, and when I'm talking about this revolutionary black love, I'm not only talking about the context of male-female, although that's the primary focus of the discussion, but even mother to child, father to children, husband to family, grandfather to grandchildren, all of these different aspects of love. One of the things that the European did when he came amongst us and he decided that he wanted to try to conquer us is he tried to break up the love and trust that we have for each other. And they did this in various ways. And so if that's the case, and historically it is, and if you study and you know what you're looking for, you see it. You see the importance of black love. But in this day and time, while what I would call regular black love is essential, it's necessary, it's can't do without it. Those who would be revolutionary Africans have to take it to the next level. It's not enough for us to simply say, find a complementary mate, marry, have children, stay married, and become ancestors. I mean, that's great. That's fantastic. But the goal, the thing that they have stopped as I've been doing this study, the ultimate goal is for two revolutionary people to come together and have revolutionary children. And those revolutionary children, instead of starting from scratch, start from a point of having the knowledge of themselves, the knowledge of their enemies, the knowledge of what needs to be built, and can begin the process of building. And then their children can take and institutionalize that process and continue forward. And that's where you get the changing of the world from its current state of African powerlessness to the returning to our former state of African sovereignty. And so that's the importance of revolutionary black love. That's the purpose of revolutionary black love. And that's the necessity of revolutionary black love, because this is the key to us becoming, for lack of a better word, free or liberated. This is the process. And the thing about it is, Europeans believe in this more than Africans, more than black people. And I'm going to give an example, because somebody's going to be like, what are you talking about? The J. Edgar Hoover, in his COINTELPRO papers, talks about preventing the rise of the black Messiah. And he gives several examples of people who could possibly fill that position at the time. And it's very interesting, the wording that he uses when he says black Messiah. And there are other Europeans in other papers who talk about certain things, the fear of the return of a Nat Turner-like individual. And when you really look at the psychology of the Europeans, one of the things they fear most is that, and they believe it's one person, where I don't believe it's a generational thing, but they fear that one person, that one black person, man or woman, who can come and unify black people and point us in a direction forward towards sovereignty, and get the masses of black people on one accord and move forward to free ourselves from the yoke of oppression. And that's their greatest fear, because what they believe is, if we get free, we're going to do to them what they've done to us. And so that's why that's their greatest fear. And that's why you see now the push for the interracialism and the homosexuality. Because it's almost like a mathematical equation, or it's almost like an algorithm where, for example, computer hackers, sometimes they'll just go through random passwords over and over and over and just changing cycle, in a brute force method of figuring out the password. And from a perspective of people being born, Europeans have come to the conclusion that they, after studying us for years, they know each generation we keep producing people who keep calling us to our ancestors, people who keep trying to build institutions, people who keep trying to do revolutionary acts. So each generation, they pretty much expect it, and they keep on the lookout for that person. And so when I was coming up, for example, there were multiple people. You had a Dr. Amos Wilson, who was really a genius. You had people like Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, who probably was the strongest black voice, the strongest voice of black manhood that I have seen. And you had, you know, and there were other people around. You know, Master Teacher Dr. John Henry Clark was still around. Dr. Yusuf Ben-Yakinen was still around. And then they were part of an entire movement. And there's so many others who go unnamed. Dr. Frances Cress Wilson, who, with her key analysis of the system of racism and white supremacy. And so the European has come to the conclusion, rightfully so, that we're going to keep producing those people. There's nothing that really can prevent that, because as long as you oppress a people, their desire to be free will produce people of the mindset to be free. So you work on two paradigms, or as many as you can. You have to work on producing, actually, you work on three paradigms. You work on population control, because the fewer people that are born, the more you slow down the process of those types of revolutionary people being born. And you can do the population control through various means. You work on the feminization of the men. The men become weaker the harder it is to produce a revolutionary man. And you use these different methods for that. And then you do the race mixing. And the reality of the situation is extremely difficult to near impossible for a person to come out of a non-black union and to be for African sovereignty, because it means going against family members. And so you see all of these agendas being pushed in order to push back the production of revolutionary children. So within that context and understanding what's going on, it makes revolutionary black love that much more important. And so one of the keys and one of the most important things within this, and I was talking about Baroudi, and I overheard him say this, or he alluded to it, I should say, is mate selection. And one of the things we do, all of us are guilty of it, I'm pretty sure. There's always one exception to the rule. But we choose our mates, even people who are quote-unquote conscious, African-centered, and, you know, all those labels. We choose our mates based on what we see. We choose our mates based on superficial things. And we oftentimes, until we learn better, we don't choose our mates based on character. We don't choose our mates based on their sincerity to the movement. We don't choose our mates based on how their attributes will contribute to our growth and development, and how our attributes will contribute to their growth and development. Sometimes you can even make the mistake, I've done this before, you meet somebody, you're so much alike, and you're like, wow, this person's almost like, you know, a female me. And then you try to get with the person and everything, and there's a conflict because you're too much alike, and you have some the same strengths and the same weaknesses, and you're more of a detriment to each other than you are a compliment to each other. And so these are mistakes that are made not just by people who are African centered, but by people in general. And in Western society, there's really no, to my knowledge, of course, I mean, you may have to pay somebody for some type of dating service or something like that, but there's no, in the way we're brought up, there's no understanding, there's no way that mate selection is taught, especially in the Black community. And so we see people literally choosing the same type of person over and over and over again, getting the same result and wondering why. But because maybe that person looks a little bit different from the last one, and you know, oh, okay, well, the other one was light-skinned, this one dark-skinned, so on. We look at superficial things, don't realize we're literally choosing the same person over and over and over and getting the same result. And so what we have to have is some type of mechanism to put in place. First of all, you have to know yourself. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are your goals? What are your desires? And then you can start really actually looking for a complimentary mate. Now, I'm not talking about people who are just, you know, you're just trying to mess around. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about people who are serious, people who are looking for someone that they can build with, that they can build a family with, that they can help contribute to the community, and that they can help liberate Black people. Those are the people I'm talking about. And so one of the prime examples, or one of the best examples of a revolutionary couple that I've come across in my studies is Robert F. Williams and Mama Mabel Williams. And for those who are unfamiliar with Robert F. Williams was a leader within the NAACP. He was the NAACP chairman of the Monroe, North Carolina chapter. And what makes Robert F. Williams so interesting and so inspiring is that he's one of the early advocates for self-defense during the civil rights era. And he's rarely discussed within that context, but it's a fact that he inspired, for example, Huey P. Newton and the Black Panther Party. And Robert F. Williams is very interesting because when you look at the things he did and what he went through, and the fact that his wife was beside him all that time, and you look at the things he, like I said, the things he went through, defending the community while armed at that time. At the time, there were rape and abuse of Black women taking place in Monroe, North Carolina. And of course, the NAACP was largely a nonviolent organization. So he had to actually go against the tenets of his organization because the women of the community, as seeing him as a leader of the community, they had tried some legal means to bring these people to prosecution, things of that nature, to no avail. The question was famously asked of him, okay, what are you going to do now, Robert? And that's at that point where he formed the Black Guard, got his weapons. He was trained, former, I believe he's an Army veteran, but I know he's a former military veteran. got the other brothers in the community, and they defended themselves from the KKK. And that he answered that question. And eventually, he would be condemned by not only the NAACP, but Martin Luther King. Eventually, he would be exiled from America and would go to Cuba, and eventually would go to China. And the thing about it is that this man really made a life-changing decision. And the thing about it is we never really think about what are the chances of him doing that if he didn't have a woman beside him who believed in him fully and believed in his leadership and was with him regardless of what the consequences of the actions were. And so when I look at Mama Mabel Williams, I really look at her in a way as his secret weapon. When they were in Cuba, they had a newspaper, The Crusader, and they also had a broadcast. They had Radio Free Dixie, and they broadcast that back into the South. And she really helped organize and made sure that those things were possible. And so what we have here is a revolutionary team, a man and woman willing to sacrifice their lives for the freedom and liberation of black people, but working together and depending on each other and each other's strengths and weaknesses in order to achieve those goals. And so the reason that I believe that they don't tell this story of Robert F. Williams is because it's an example of what can happen when a black man and black woman come together in order to fight for the liberation of black people. And in this day and in this context, these are stories that we don't hear and stories that we need to hear, that need to be told, that we need to study, because they give us an example of what we can do and what we should be doing. And I'm not saying whether or not we should be defending ourselves or we should be armed and things like that. I think that pretty much goes without saying. There's a correct manner to do those things, and that's a whole nother discussion. That's not today's discussion. But the example that is set is what takes place when two complementary black people, a black man and a black woman, decide that they are going to go forward together, regardless of circumstance, and work for black people. And, you know, they're a beautiful example, but even that example is not sufficient enough. It's not the apex. But many of us would do well just to get there. The apex, what we need the most, is multi-generational revolutionary couples. Meaning that a Robert and Mabel Williams produce a Robert and Mabel Williams that produce a Robert and Mabel Williams. And this is where we've fallen short. When I study, especially in the modern context, maybe the last 100 years or so, is very rare that you see people who do the work produce more people that do the work. Now, there's actually an elder that I know, and his children are doing the work in different aspects. He and his wife been in the movement for, I have no idea, probably before I was born. And they produce children, and the children are doing fantastic work here and on the continent. And when I look at a family, an African-centered family, revolutionary family. I look at this elder, his wife, his sons and daughters, and I say, okay, that's it. That's the goal. And one day I'm going to actually sit down with him and ask him, how did he do that? In fact, I may ask him how to write a book on it. I have no idea if he would be amenable to that, but I think it'd be invaluable, because when we produce revolutionary families, that's how things will get done. Because then you can start taking groups of people who have multiple generations of the same idea coming together. You create, and then that's where you begin to create, for lack of a better word, clans or tribes of different black people in different places of the same mindset, who know what they have to do and are trained properly from birth. And this is the goal. This is the key. This is the way forward. This is what has to be done. And that's why mixed selection is so important and so difficult. Because number one, there's so few like-minded black people. And just because both people have the same idea or the same knowledge system, same belief system, same ideology, same philosophy, doesn't mean that you're necessarily compatible. That's the thing that makes it so difficult. Because you can still not get along with the person. Or your personalities, you know, you might have personality conflict, or hey, you might not just be attracted to them like that. Might be better friends than other things. I mean, the same things that go on with regular, quote unquote, dating, you still have those issues. And the balance is to try to find what's important within the context of the person's character and you being ideologically aligned and having the same goals and ideals, and how much do you sacrifice of the other stuff that you know is not as important. These are all the things that we have to think about when we're dealing with this revolutionary black love. And it's a difficult road, but it's the key forward. Black people are at a point right now where we can't keep starting over, where we can't keep producing children that have no idea that racism is going on, have no idea what white supremacy is, and then they have to go through the first 2 decades of their life, whatever the case may be, and be like, oh, wow, wait a minute. America's racist. Or you live in Africa and you find out, oh, Arabs are racist if you live in North Africa. Or, you know, wherever you may be, and you have that wake-up call. Those are things that we can't afford to have people, our children, dying to find the truth. Because how many black people do we know who have been murdered under various circumstances? And then their parents or their relatives or whoever, then they act like they're surprised that the person was murdered because they were black. And I see this, we see this often. We see this with these police shootings. And people say, I can't believe it. And people are shocked and outraged and awed and so forth, so on. But this has been happening for hundreds of years. And so we've reached a point where we can't have as many of those people that don't know, that starting from scratch. We have to produce people who know what's going on from the beginning and are prepared to do the things that are necessary for African survival and eventual return to greatness in the 21st century. So with that, I'm going to take a quick break. If anybody's out there, you want to call in, you got questions, comments, we'll take those on the other side of the break. If not, I'll just go into a little bit more of this discussion to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to On the Wake Up Radio. This is The Hour, and I am your guest host, DC Radical One. If you would like to call in and join the conversation, the number is 678-603-4393. And the topic of tonight's discussion is revolutionary black love. And so we were talking about the importance of mate selection. And really, when we're talking about mate selection in this context as African people, we're looking for people who will help us become a better us, and people that we can come together with and accomplish the goal of not just creating a black life, but taking shape and mold that black life to become a revolutionary African. And I know that's not really the context of what we think about when we talk about relationships, which is part of the reason that we're failing as a people. Because we've been taught that we should allow children to be whatever they want to be, whoever they want to be. In the context of this society, we see where that's going. We have men trying to be women, women trying to be men, black women trying to look white, white women trying to look black, and we have a whole bunch of confusion. And one thing Baba Dale Jones said is that confusion is the enemy of revolution. And so we can't have confusion. We have to be very clear. And the easiest way to be very clear is to be taught from the beginning who you are and who you are not. And so really that process, we always think about it, the process taking place when people are young. But the process actually takes place before the person is even conceived. Just think about that for a moment. Before you're even conceived, the process of producing a revolutionary African takes place. As a black man, if you have knowledge and you choose a woman without knowledge, you have decreased your chance of producing an African revolutionary child. I didn't say it's impossible. I said you have decreased your chances of producing a revolutionary child. For those of us who claim to be, whether it's African-centered, conscious, whatever, the thing we should want most is for our child to start off ahead of us and to have the same mentality, to study the same things, and to implement solutions that we couldn't come up with, to build the things that we couldn't build that we didn't have a lifetime to build, to come up with the ideas that we couldn't come up with because we didn't have in a lifetime. That has to be the goal. Otherwise, why are you producing children? Otherwise, you're producing children to be slaves. See, those are the two choices. You're producing children to be free and to free people, or you're producing children to be slaves. You're producing children to be murdered in the street, shot down like dogs, beaten, raped. Producing children to be victims all over the planet. Victims of the European, victims of the Arab, victims of the Chinese. Or you're producing children who will be victorious over the European, victorious over the Arab, victorious over the Chinese, the Asian, the Indian, and who, what other person that may exist. See, those are the two choices. Do you want to condemn your children to the same suffering, the same degradation, the same destruction? Or do you want to produce children who will turn the tide of that? That's what it really comes down to. And I don't think we look at it that way, but that's the reality. When our ancestors who were captured and brought here, some people made different choices. Some people said, I am not going to condemn my children to this. I'm committing suicide. I'm jumping off this boat. Not going to condemn my children to this. I don't see a way out, so I'm jumping off the boat. Other people, they said, I believe that no matter what's on the other side was of this ocean, that I can get my child, I can teach them to be an African, I can teach them to be free, I can teach them to fight, and that they're going to do that, and they're going to help us be free. So I'm not jumping off this boat. I'm going to endure whatever I got to endure so that they can see something better. But either way, they made a choice looking forward into the future for our people. And as if we are to be our ancestors, which we are and should striving to be, we have to begin the process of not just changing ourselves, which that's fundamental, but changing the entire bloodline moving forward. The Europeans believe in bloodlines, and they learned that from us. They call it genetics now. In the African context, in the African tradition, really what you have is when a person gets married to another person, you're talking about bringing two families together. And that's why people will go and meet the family and try to figure out what's going on here. We don't do that as much anymore, and that's one of the reasons our relationships fail. You need to know, do they have history of cancer or diabetes or something in the family? Sickle cell anemia. Two people with sickle cell anemia might pass that on. How many addicts are in the family? You got addicts in your family, they got addicts in their family, you more likely produce an addict. These are things that we don't think about when we're talking about relationships, but if we're going to build children who can aid us in liberation, these things you have to think about. And I know it's deep because we don't really think about it this way. What we really do is we look at sister like, whoa, she got locks, she dark skin, or she light skin, whatever you like. Oh man, she's nice and slim, or she got, you know, she's well built, all that good stuff. You know, sister might look at her brother, oh, he got broad shoulders and got nice teeth and like the way he dressed and talked. But none of that, I mean, all those things are nice and wonderful, but none of that necessarily contributes to the ultimate goal. Yes, you have to be attracted to the person that you're dealing with. It goes without saying. But to complete the goal, complete the mission, to do what so many of our ancestors and some of our elders have failed to do, to be quite frank, we have to change the paradigm and change our psychology of how we deal with mate selection and how we think about relationships as African people. Oh, see, we have a question. Says, do you remember when you couldn't pick your mate and your mate was selected for you from childhood? I am not old enough to remember that. I do understand the process, and there's a misnomer in African tradition about this. In true African tradition, your mate was not selected for you, because you had the choice. For example, if a sister just didn't like a brother for whatever reason, even if the family picked them, she had the choice to say no. And like, that's not what I'm looking for here. But within the context of African society, people grew up around each other, and the elders looked at the children and how they interacted. And many times they would try to facilitate a relationship between two people who already knew each other, the families already knew each other, and they could see a connection between the two young people. That's how it was traditionally done. But you still had the right as a person to choose someone else if that was you just didn't like that person, your desire was for someone else, or y'all didn't get along the way people thought y'all got along, or whatever the situation may be. Maybe the person had bad character and no one saw it except you. And so there's kind of a misnomer, a misunderstanding that in our traditional society, now I'm going with our traditions and how things were when we were sane. Now, if you're talking about people, you're talking about here in this context in the West, it's a different discussion. But the what's being asked comes out of our traditions. But as with many things in the West, they've been kind of changed and corrupted a little bit. But it's a process that is what that would be hard for us to do in this context, because our families have been destroyed. And so when we were doing things like that, as far as trying to facilitate it, mates for our children from other families that we knew, it was because you live in an environment where everyone knew everyone. And you knew the family, you knew the history, you knew who was who, what they were about, and things like that. And you would try to facilitate it from there. So it comes out of our traditions, and there was a reason for it. But within this context, I think it's very difficult, because I don't think we have a lot of families who are intact, and we don't have a lot of elders in the community, being completely honest. Just because you lived a long time doesn't make you an elder. You know, we got people in their 60s still, you know, doing a lot of stuff that's not really conducive. So, I mean, that was something that once we rebuild our families, maybe we could get back to. But we're not in a space, I don't believe, or in a condition, I should say, where we can do those things. Because let's be real, a lot of families, they're hiding the pedophile in the family. So, I mean, we have to deal with internal things like that. You know, that's one of the secrets that isn't discussed. Who's a pedophile in your family? Are you marrying into a family of pedophiles? Are you bringing children into a family of pedophiles? You know, but we're talking about other things. That's a big thing. And so this discussion of revolutionary black love really is so deep and so profound. There's so many other aspects of it I would love to get into, but we're running short on time. So I just want to make a quick announcement, really quick. The Straight Black Pride Movement here in D.C. is having a singles mixer while we're talking about mate selection. We're having a singles mixer this Saturday, December 8th at 9:30 p.m. at Everlasting Life Cafe, 9185 Central Avenue, Maryland, 20743. It is free. You just have to purchase some food from the cafe. And You know, come on out and enjoy yourself. This is our second mixer we've had. Any brothers out there, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, if you're on the East Coast, man, it's worth your while. We had some really quality sisters show up for the first one. You know, I'm not saying that you're going to necessarily find your wife, but yeah, the opportunities are there. I'll just say that. And one of the reasons why Straight Black Pride DC, one of the reasons why we put that together is to facilitate more of this revolutionary black love. So with that, I'll say thank you all for listening. Shout out to Raw on the Boards and our producer, Cindy Ashby. Tune in next Thursday from 8 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. Also, you can catch the replays on YouTube, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes. You're listening to On the Wake Up Radio. This is the hour. I am your guest host, DC Radical One. And with that, I say peace.